Seasonal, patchy morning fog, off and on rain throughout the day, a high of 53. Right now, some drizzle, 53 Kenosha, 52 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Today is the monthly visit of Kaylin Palomares from Racine County. And she always has a way of bringing in some very, very interesting guests to talk about some kind of issue or concern related to the environment. And Kaylin Palomares has really hit the jackpot this time around with something that is quite timely and I think will be a very interesting topic for us to explore, hunting, and specifically deer hunting, or especially deer hunting, I should say. Kaylin has invited to join us today Marty Johnson, who is with the Wisconsin DNR as senior wildlife biologist at Bong. That is Richard Bong State Recreation Area out in Kansasville. And of course, I'm sure many of you are well acquainted with Bong and what a beautiful place it is. We're going to be talking about, you know, kind of a facet of its ongoing operation that a lot of us don't know very, very much about. So, Kaylin Palomares, Marty Johnson, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thanks.
Kaylin, it sounds like the two of you actually just met this morning for the very first time, but tell us about how this connection was made.
Yeah, so I wanted to have someone on about hunting this month because it is the month of hunting in Wisconsin, deer hunting specifically. So I reached out to the DNR. They actually have an email that you can send an email to and say, I want to talk to someone about this topic, and they will find someone who can answer your questions about that thing,
wow,
which is great. However, I was told by my colleagues that they know someone already named Marty Johnson. That's a wildlife biologist that knows everything you could know about deer and hunting and the operations going on around here and in Racine County. So the person that I contacted in the DNR actually sent me to Marty, so it all worked out great. We all had the same idea. So Marty is the... What is your place on that committee in which John is on?
So Jonathan Grove works for Racine County, and we have now what's called a County Deer Advisory Council. So it's made up of several citizens that sit in the committee. I am the liaison to that group, and so it's been a change that started in 2014. So I provide information based on the deer season. And this group looks at a number of different things, looking at ag damage, looking at damage to trees, looking at car collisions, looking at hunter input from the season, also the health of the herd. So we look at a number of different things to come up with a season framework and also how we're going to proceed as far as how many deer are going to be harvested and things of that nature. So
my colleague, John Grove, is a member of that group, and he represents the urban district or area for that group. So that's kind of where all these connections come from.
Wow, I like that. That's really, really good. Well, this is going to be an interesting topic for us to explore, I'm sure. Marnie Johnson, because this is your very first visit to the morning show, would probably be good for us to find out a little bit about you. And what I know from our very brief chat before this interview is that for someone who is a wildlife biologist at Bong, you are a city kid. Your roots go back to Milwaukee. Tell us more about your early life and sort of the path that leads you to the work you've been doing now for more than 20 years.
Sure. So I grew up on the east side of Milwaukee near UWM. As a kid, my time was spent more playing sports, but being outdoors a lot too, just kind of poking around. My parents are not hunters. I do have some hunting in the family. Never got involved with it, but always kind of thought about it. But as growing up, my grandfather was big on birds, and that really got me into liking the outdoors. Hmm. And so watching shows like Mutual Omaha, Wild Kingdom, things like that just got me really interested in animals, and I like being outdoors. My mom's side of the family also has a farming background a little bit, so spent a little time in the Dells outdoors there as well. So just kind of liking being outdoors, liking animals, which a lot of people do, kind of got me in the direction of getting into this field. And then obviously, too, the work that we do impacts the environment, impacts species, also providing a lot of recreational opportunities for people, but giving back to the land and seeing how things can be altered and improved. Once I got out of high school, I knew what I wanted to do. I went to UW-Madison. Started out as a double major in forestry and wildlife, but liked the wildlife end a little better. And so I started with that. In about 4.5 years, I got out of Madison. During that time, too, I spent several summers doing work. I worked at in the department for two summers at Bong. One time I was a park superintendent trainee. And then the second time I worked with the Hard Hat crew where we did projects on the property. And then my last two summers in college, I was fortunate. I got to go out to California, and I worked for the Forest Service out there. So I was doing spotted owl surveys and also doing some wildland firefighting. So loved that. And then once I got back, graduated from college, my first job out of college was working for the department again, working for endangered resources. And I worked raising trumpeter swans as part of the recovery project there, doing the decoy rearing method. From there, got in real quick with the department. I worked for water regulation and zoning for about 4.5 years. And then I was fortunate and able to slide into this position at Bong. So I've been there for a little over 27 years. So
wow.
Doing a variety of things on the property and in Racine and Kenosha County.
I asked you at one point in our pre-interview chat something about what you do, and I was really kind of staggered at the length of the list. I mean, your responsibilities there are varied and considerable. Give us at least the capsule summary of them.
As a wildlife biologist, we deal with managing the populations. We do that through setting seasons, through monitoring, and doing surveys. But we're also involved with doing habitat work on Bong. It's a grassland area, at least we try to keep maintain it as a grassland area. So we do a lot of habitat work out there, whether it's brushing, doing prescribed burning, invasive species management. And then I have several other properties in Racine and Kenosha County that I manage doing similar work. Habitat work, dealing with the different animal species, and we also deal with the public. We're dealing with the public from the hunting standpoint, but also from the non-hunting. We provide input or advice on nuisance wildlife. We deal with people issues, whether it's problems with hunters or maybe problems with neighbors on our local wildlife area. So a variety of things. And then on top of that, we're also doing land acquisition, trying to get additional lands to protect as well as maintain. And as a biologist, we're also doing looking for funding for different things, writing for projects for stamp dollars, or maybe looking for things, funding sources from outside groups like National Wild Turkey Federation. So large gambit of different activities. On Bong right now, the big thing is pheasant hunting. And so we're stocking birds 7 days a week, and we're also relating to the pheasant hunters, too, in terms of their happiness or unhappiness with the level of our stocking out there.
Interesting. That's something I learned. I had never had any notion of that, that when it comes to pheasant hunting, we don't have enough wild pheasants to supply the demand. So you are actually stocking Bong with pheasants the way someone might stock a stream with trout that you bring in.
Correct.
Just tell us a little bit about that process, how that happens, where these pheasants come from, and the way in which this is done, I assume, in a thoughtful way.
So we used to have wild pheasants. Pheasants were brought in from Asia and stocked around the country. But due to changes in the landscape, farming becoming cleaner, loss of winter cover as well as nesting cover, we just don't have wild or the habitat to support wild populations anymore. Pheasant hunting is a big activity around the country. It's also been part of CRP, and CRP is a program in the NRCS that helps to provide cover on farmland, highly erodible farmland, that benefits not only pheasants, but it also benefits other wildlife. A lot of the songbirds that we love to see rely on that, as well as other birds, game birds as well. So anyway, with the loss of the cover, whether it's nesting or overwintering, wild populations just weren't able to sustain themselves anymore. But there was still a strong interest of pheasant hunting. So Poinette is the game farm where we raise birds out there. They raise about 75,000 birds every year, and they disseminate them throughout the state. There are a number of wildlife areas around the state that are stocked with pheasants. But Bong, being a recreational area, has always gotten a large percentage of birds. We get anywhere from 9 to 10,000 birds, sometimes up to 11,000 birds per year. And so because it's a recreational area and we're able to put that amount of birds out there, we also charge a fee. To hunt out at Bong, it's $12 per day while we're stocking. Our other public hunting grounds, there aren't any fees for that, but a lot of our other public hunting grounds, we're only stocking once or twice a week. Hmm. Bong is being stocked 7 days a week from the beginning of the season to the end. Wow. Until second week in December.
Wow.
We have a facility out there where we hold the birds. They're brought in from Poinette, and then we stock at certain levels every day using a truck and a UTV. So right now we're stocking, I think, right around 160 birds per day. And at the beginning of the season, we started at 200 birds per day. So on Bong, we're stocking both hens and roosters. So hunters can take two birds per day out there, and that's pretty much it. Now, it's a popular activity. It started out in the 70s, 80s. The fee at that time was about $3. So when we bumped up to $12 in 2015, caused a little bit of a stir. But we're doing
people noticed, I'm sure.
They did, and they made sure to let us know. We've also gone through a transition this year. The park has had an entrance station where people could buy their permits, and they've been transitioning to more using a kiosk electronic system. So you can buy your permit in person Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but the rest of the week you use the kiosk to purchase your permit. And that's a new change for the hunters and a little bit of a wrinkle this year.
Yeah. So you said something about bringing in 10,000 birds into Bong alone.
Correct.
So what is your sense, and maybe I don't know how closely you're able to even know this, but so how many of those 10,000 pheasants end up being shot by hunters?
That we're not, we haven't done a check on that recently. It's been a while since. So I couldn't tell you exactly how well hunters do. Every year we have birds that make it through the winter. Not a lot. These are game farm birds, so these aren't wild birds with strong instincts.
Mm.
So they're not going to make it through the winter typically. We do see some birds in the spring, but usually at the bird feeders by usually, June, July, they're gone. And so there, I think we were talking about the former naturalist out there, Beth Geppinger. Her crew had seen some wild birds or offspring one summer, but that's a rarity. What hunters get, we and this is just spitballing,
mm-hmm.
Maybe 30-40%, but that's just spitballing. It's hard to say exactly how well people do. But in our interactions with hunters, usually people are getting at least a couple birds at a time or throughout the season. I talked with one hunter last year who went out just about every day, and he had gotten somewhere around 30 birds for the whole season. So we know that people are getting birds.
Hmm. So pheasant hunting, of course, is just one of several different types of hunting that is permitted in Wisconsin, permitted and also regulated, particularly for all of the non-hunters listening, but who otherwise are interested in learning more. What are these various hunting seasons that occur throughout the year?
Oh, goes from small game to big game, bird hunting. So what's going on right now? We're coming up on the gun deer season, but other seasons that are going on right now, we've got pheasant, bobwhite quail, partridge, rough grouse, sharp-tailed grouse, crows, turkey hunting, bear hunting, migratory bird season. We've got geese and duck. Small game include cottontail, rabbits, and squirrels. There's also coyote, and then we're starting up with trapping with beaver and mink and muskrat, fox, bobcat, fisher, otter, raccoon. So there's just a lot of things that are going on right now.
Wow.
Fall is a big time for hunting, going through usually the end of the year, starting a little bit into the new year, and then in the springtime, turkey hunting is a big activity.
In general, why do seasons hunt? I mean, and I think for the most part, we're talking about seasons where hunting is permitted. Why do those seasons occur where they do in the calendar year? I'm guessing it's not just happenstance or random that, for instance, deer hunting season is about to begin. Does it make sense for deer hunting season, for instance, to begin right now?
Usually when hunting seasons are implemented, they're not impacting the breeding season as far as having offspring. So in the fall for deer season, this is the right time. The rut started a little bit ago, and so we're taking advantage of that end of the breeding season where the deer are most active. And so you're able to take advantage while they're running out and about. Having a deer season in the spring, they're fawning, and so that isn't ideal. You're hurting the potential for reproduction,
right,
and potentially impacting the population. So most seasons are set up that way to take advantage of high activity area, but you're not also impacting the actual production of offspring.
Right. So in terms of what people are permitted to hunt in Wisconsin, I mean, you can't hunt for anything, although that was a really long list you just gave us just now. In general, what determines that a given something can be hunted versus other species that cannot be hunted, I mean, under any circumstances?
That kind of gets to the dividing line, game species versus non-game species. So a lot of the species that we hunt are probably traditionally were hunted in the pre-settlement times. You know, hunting was more of a subsistence versus a recreational opportunity.
Right.
And so, as we mentioned, the big game species like deer and now elk as well. I forgot to mention that too. Those were animals that were hunted for food and also for clothing and things of that nature. So that's kind of carried on. The non-game species tend to be things that are smaller and not necessarily that you can eat or use. You know, songbird isn't something that you can create into clothing or anything like that,
right,
or something that you could eat. And then it also depends on the population status. Some of the fur bearers, such as fishers or otters, those numbers were down not years ago. They've rebounded. Those species have been used for clothing and things of that nature. So depending on the potential use for that animal and then also the status of the population, we can think about turkeys. At one point in North America, turkeys were gone because they had been overhunted, disease issues and things like that. And the reintroduction program with wild birds around the country has been a success. So at one point, you couldn't hunt turkeys in Wisconsin. We didn't even have turkeys in Wisconsin. So we're able to reintroduce the species. It grew in terms of a population size and provide us an opportunity for hunting. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the reasons for that. And then from that standpoint, we're monitoring the population, and then we're able to set regulations as well as season lengths and quotas for individual species depending on how well the species is doing.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Marty Johnson, who is with the Wisconsin DNR Senior Wildlife Biologist at Bong. Kaylin Palomares is with us. She has invited Marty Johnson to join us to talk about hunting in Wisconsin. And in a moment, we're going to dig into some specifics related to the deer hunting season and certain concerns. So where exactly is hunting permitted in Wisconsin? I mean, it's regulated not only in terms of when it's allowed, but I assume to some extent it's also regulated in terms of where it is allowed. Or am I wrong about that?
Hunting can occur anywhere in the state. We've got public hunting grounds. If we're talking about cities, for valid reasons, there are restrictions in terms of hunting. And usually in those communities, firearm prohibition, so you can't use a gun. There are opportunities to do archery within certain framework in urban areas. Some communities may have some more restrictions on that, but you're able to do that in certain circumstances. So in some areas where maybe you have bigger parcels of land that you own several acres, you could bow hunt back there for deer. So the state provides the framework for the hunting season, and then the communities can be more restrictive in terms of what they will or will not allow. And then we've got public land, whether it's state properties, some county lands in Racine and Kenosha County. The counties do not allow any hunting on their properties, but other parts of the state, some of the county lands are open for hunting. And then also we have federal lands up in northern Wisconsin where it's open for hunting and other activities.
Interesting. So, for instance, Kaylin, you may be tired of Hawthorne Hollow questions by now, but, you were on the staff there for a number of years. So, for instance, at Hawthorne Hollow, is hunting permitted? And maybe a second question is, does hunting occur anyway if it's not permitted?
So, given that Hawthorne Hollow is, even though it's a public, nonprofit, it's still owned by the Hyslop Foundation, and so in that area of summers, hunting is allowed. And so technically you probably could hunt at Hawthorne Hollow. However, Hawthorne Hollow as a organization has their own rules about hunting. And so unless there's a major overpopulation issue going on or damage happening, I don't foresee Hawthorne Hollow allowing hunting, especially to the public. So, and especially since it's such a human recreation area. So,
right. Yeah, when you just think about the way it is used and, people just hunting on the trails, it's a little scary.
And
actually, it's very scary to think about
and
hunting.
It's very close. It's very close to other homes. It's very close to Highway 31 Green Bay Road. And on top of that, Hawthorne Hollow is meant to be a sanctuary where everything is being protected. And so there's a lot of other places around that people can hunt or that deer get hit by cars or things of that nature. So that's supposed to be the place that they can run from that and be protected from that. And that goes for fishing, too. There's no fishing allowed at Hawthorne Hollow either. So don't go fishing there. Go hunting there, people. Because people do. They bring their fishing poles.
Oh, dear. Yes. And I'm sure they get chased away by kind yet firm staff members at Hawthorne Hollow.
They try.
Very good. So, Marty Johnson, one of the reasons Kaylin Palomares invited you now is because we are on the eve of another deer hunting season. First of all, remind us of exactly when deer hunting is permitted in Wisconsin. I mean, what is the beginning and the end of the season?
So the archery and crossbow season actually started on September 14th. And that will run until January 5th in some areas in the metro units and also some parts of the southern farmland zone. Archery hunting will go until January 31st, depending on how the CEDAC decided what they wanted to do. All metro units, so for Racine and Kenosha County, the area east of I-94 is considered the metro unit. And so they have an extended season. Reason being for that is that in the metro unit, there's limited opportunities for hunting, and so they want to put the season as long as possible to give as much opportunity to harvest deer. So anyway, so for the archery crossbow season, September 14th through January 5th, and in some areas until January 31st. But as you had mentioned, the upcoming season that is big in a lot of people's mind is the 9-day gun deer season. So that'll start on November 23rd and run through December 1st.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea it was so brief.
Right.
Wow.
And we have additional gun seasons after that. We have the muzzleloader season, and then there's also an antlerless season and a potential for a holiday hunt season. So there's a couple additional gun opportunities, but the 9-day is the big one.
Wow. Now I understand why, you know, like someone would miss church choir, for instance, because it's deer hunting season and they just have to go. And I never paid enough attention to understand that window is so brief. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense. Okay. I mean, you got to go when you got to go.
Right.
And so interesting. So there's so much intense activity in a relatively short amount of time. How many hunters are we talking about through the state of Wisconsin, at least roughly? I mean, I assume
600,000 to 700,000.
I wondered if it was thousands. I would not have guessed it was hundreds of thousands. So,
So as of midnight of October 29th, we had sold 444,743 permits. So, or licenses, gun, bow, crossbow, sports, and patron licenses.
Wow.
So, and that'll go up and through the gun deer season too.
Wow. And Kaylin Bonamaris, you learned something early this morning that you should probably share with our listeners that has to do with sort of the money side of deer hunting and other kinds of hunting permits.
Yeah, something that I hadn't realized is that the Wisconsin DNR does not get, is it any funding or very limited funding?
We get our funding through our...
through the donations. So, right. Well, so there's no funding coming from your state taxes that are going to the Wisconsin DNR. All the funding...
The wildlife program.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. Yeah. See, I don't fully know, but I learned this, that the taxes aren't necessarily going to the DNR. It's like they have to come up with the funding for the wildlife program through these permits and through donations and grants in order to keep everything running. So
wow.
That was kind of insane to me. And Marty knows obviously more. But. Hmm.
So that means this is a revenue stream that is absolutely critical for the work that you and your colleagues do.
Correct. And another funding source is the Federal Aid and Wildlife Restoration Act. So it's a 11% excise tax on firearms, ammunition, and archery equipment. And so we get money from the federal government to do a variety of things. So that funding goes throughout the country to different state agencies. And that also helps in terms of rounding out our budget and getting our work done.
So how does it work in terms of what a hunter is permitted to do during now gun season for deer hunting season? Is there a limit in terms of what they can kill, how many deer they can kill, or not?
Depending on where you hunt. So we're at part of the Southern Farmland Zone. So it basically goes from Lake Michigan to the Mississippi River, kind of Columbia County, I think Sauk County south to the Illinois border. So in the Southern Farmland Zone, our deer herd is in good shape, depending on who you talk to. So we're always looking to harvest more deer in that area. You get your license. So let's say you're going gun deer hunting. You buy your license. You will get a tag for bucks for a male deer, which will be good anywhere in the state. Hmm. And then in the Southern Farmland Zone, you can get, depending on what your deer management unit decided, the CDAC, you can get an antlerless tag. So for Racine and Kenosha counties, you can get one antlerless tag along with your license free. And that, again, is an attempt to help manage the population. In other parts of the state, they may not offer that antlerless tag, and you can only get your buck tag. On top of that free tag, some of the counties will also offer a bonus antlerless tag that you can purchase for $12. And again, other parts of the state, they may not be doing that. They may feel that the population is not where they want it to be, and so they're limiting what can be harvested. For a hunter, if you're going out for your gun deer season in the southern farmland, again, you buy your license, you'll get your buck tag that will be good anywhere in the state. Then you'll get your free antlerless tag that you have to specify which deer management you're going to use it in, as well as if it's going to be public or private. When we went to the CDAC process, we also made some changes to how tags are issued out. There was concern during the years, early on when we had chronic wasting disease, we had a lot of tags going out because the goal was to reduce the population, to reduce the spread of the disease. And the feeling was that in a lot of cases, maybe there were too many deer taken off the landscape and there were too many free tags. So a lot of the hunters were concerned with that. In particular, the concern was that hunters, and back up a little, we also had what was called earn a buck, where a hunter would shoot an antlerless deer and they would get a sticker for an additional buck to be harvested. And a lot of hunters were concerned that people were going on public land, shooting their antlerless deer, getting their buck stickers, and then going back to their private properties and hunting on there to get the bucks. So the people who could hunt on both ends of the spectrum were taking deer away from the general public that could only hunt on public land. And so out of that we came up with a system where you have to specify which property, the private or public, you'd be hunting on to take antlerless deer, to kind of address that issue to some extent. But again, the buck tags are good anywhere in on private or public.
Fascinating. So one of the things we've danced around here a little bit, and it's really a core concern that we should really now explore for a few minutes, is this whole business of managing wildlife populations. And even before we get to that, in terms of what is deemed to be necessary to be done for the health of a given population, I would love to hear from you a little bit about how population is even counted. I mean, what sort of census occurs? I mean, to assess just how, for instance, how large the deer population is in the whole state and how large is the population in this corner of the state, for instance. You even alluded to the fact in something you said a little earlier, something about how sometimes there's maybe a difference of opinion in terms of, does this herd need to be thinned? Does this population need to be curbed? So first of all, how in the world do we even determine how many deer are out there or in a given region of the state? I just can't imagine how that's done.
We have estimates. We do not give out that there are 10,000 deer in Racine County. We use the sex age kill formula as our estimate for populations. So the backbone of that is that every deer that's harvested is registered. And so that helps us to figure out what's being harvested. We do aging of the deer to figure out what age group is being harvested more or less. And so that information is put into our formula. So the sex age kill formula uses the harvest data to estimate the population size. It starts with the buck harvest. And then there are five components of the SAK. So the buck harvest, which we get through the mandatory registration, the harvest rate, which is how many deer over 1.5 years old bucks have been harvested. So we get that through the yearling buck percentage, and then we assume a buck a recovery rate. We also get the sex ratio. We use that between does and bucks, and we estimate that from the ratio of yearling bucks to yearling does. And then we also get the fawn doe ratio, and this is from the summer deer observations done by the DNR and the public. And then again, we're getting that total harvest, so we're getting both the does and the bucks registered, and then we're able to use that data to figure out the population size or the estimate. One thing I'll mention, the concern over the years was that the public didn't have enough input in the process. And so that's how we came up with the deer councils. And there are opportunities for the public to be part of this process. One is those CDAC meetings, which we don't always get a lot of attendance to. The other thing is the input into the formula, as well as just what the CDAC reviews. So I'd mentioned the fawn to doe ratio, which helps us to figure out how productive the herd are. How many does or how many fawns are these does having? In August and September, the public can participate in the summer deer observation. So they can go on the DNR website, and there is an app that they can download, and then it can record all the deer that they see, does, fawns, bucks, and that during the daylight hours. So that information is used in the population estimate, and it's very critical to know how productive those does are being. Right now, and this is more for the CDAC, hunters can provide observations on how they did for hunting. So when you register your deer, they're going to ask you questions on, okay, did you see any of the deer? How was the hunting conditions? And then if you do not see deer, you can also provide input, just saying, I hunted for 8 hours and I didn't see any deer, or I saw five. But so these are ways for people to get involved and provide us input that actually helps with us figuring out, A, what's happening with the population, and B, also what's happening with the hunters. Are they having issues? Maybe conditions haven't been so great. One of the things that's always interesting, if there's a bad year, people think, well, the deer aren't out there. That isn't necessarily the case. Maybe there's a situation where the hunting conditions weren't great. You didn't have good snow cover. It was too warm. The deer weren't moving. So there are a lot of things that go into it. This year in particular, it's the gun deer season is starting later, further behind the start of the rut, meaning that the activity for the deer is going to be less. So potentially we could see fewer deer being harvested. So a lot of input goes into it. But we come up with a general estimate for the population. We don't give out exact numbers. We got in a little trouble a number of years ago. And so the estimate, we give a range. So like for Kenosha County, I believe the population range is somewhere between 2,200 and about 3,300 deer. That's our estimate currently right now.
Right. So this matter then of managing the population, whatever it happens to be, what is that about? I mean, why do we need to be managing this? I mean, why don't we just let nature take its course?
Well, we had talked about a little bit about hunting, and so variety of reasons for hunting. Obviously, in Wisconsin, there's a strong tradition of deer hunting, deer camp. All those kind of things. So there's a tradition that goes with that. But the landscape has changed. In pre-settlement times, you had a lot more habitat for animals to use, but you also had natural predators. You had mountain lions. You had more wolves. You had things like that that helped to keep populations in check. A lot of those large predators are gone in certain areas. The landscape has also changed. We've changed it, made it better for us. In some cases, we've made it good for deer or for different wildlife species. So hunting now becomes a tool for us to manage those populations.
And I guess part of what you're saying is we can't have, or it's possible to have too many deer. And what would be the problem if nobody ever hunted and nothing ever, and the population exploded? What are sort of the most serious issues which lead us to say that deer populations need to be contained or curbed?
We've got agricultural damage. In Racine and Kenosha County, that doesn't seem to be a problem, but other parts of the state it could be. Car collisions, which in our part of the state, high volume of traffic, so that could be an issue. Damage to the habitat. So deer browse on brush and trees. You can go some parts of the county, you can see a line of shrubs or trees, and you can see a nice uniform line where the deer are browsing. When they damage the habitat, they're not only affecting them, affecting their potential food source, but they could be affecting other animal species and as well as plant species. Maybe there's some rare flowers or something that they're having an impact on. But the impact, and so what happens over time is, as the habitat degrades, if the deer population continues to increase, it becomes less supportive for them and other species. So if the population gets too large, they don't have any food, they've eaten themselves out of house and home, then you start seeing that impact where maybe they're starting to starve. And that's happened in other parts of the country in years ago. And from another thing that we haven't talked about is the disease management with chronic wasting disease. The idea is that the disease spreads through contact of animals, through saliva, feces. And so in higher population, there's more interaction between animals. So there's a better opportunity for sick animals to interact with healthy animals. And then you end up spreading the disease quicker than if you had a population that was more appropriate
right.
for the area.
So we heard a lot about chronic wasting disease a few years ago, but not so much recently. Is this a little bit less of an issue than it has been in the past, or is it still a source of pretty serious concern.
It's still a source of concern. It's continued to spread through the state. In Racine and Kenosha County, our first positive for Kenosha County was in 2003. Our next positive wasn't until 2022. So we only have two positives in Kenosha County. In Racine, our first positive was in 2012, and then the next positive wasn't until 2022. But then we've had another set of positives in 2023, and I believe we just have a new positive in Racine County again this year.
Hmm.
Early on, we had mandatory sampling for hunters, and then we stopped, I believe it was in 2006. And so since that time, our sampling, at least for the two county areas, has dropped dramatically.
Wow.
Where we were getting hundreds, or now we're down to between 20 and 40 per year. So the fact that we haven't had any positives over the years isn't an indication that the disease isn't there or that it hasn't spread. It's that we haven't got adequate sampling to get an idea of what's happening out there.
Right. And at any rate, that sounds like a terrible way for a deer to die. So it is worth trying to curb this from happening.
Yeah, and we're providing free sampling for hunters. We've got a number of locations in the area where people can drop off heads, and we then take the samples and send them up to the lab that eventually, and Poinet that eventually sends it to Madison for final testing. For chronic racing disease, symptoms are for the animal is that they drool, they look emaciated, they're lethargic, they're just not with it, and you can tell when the deer is sick. Once the symptoms show up, within about a year's time, the animal will die. This disease kills the animal. There's no cure for it right now. Mm-hmm. One of the concerns that floats around that really hasn't been answered, but at this point, there is no connection between humans and chronic wasting disease. The Wisconsin Health Department does recommend if your animal is sick that you do not eat it. That you process the deer, send it in for testing, and wait till you get results to be able to figure that out. I think our turnaround time right now is somewhere around 9 days or so, at least. So we're getting pretty quick in terms of getting results back to the hunters.
Yeah. By the way, when someone goes out hunting and gets a deer, what do they have to do? I mean, can they just go home, or is there something that they have to do so you know who killed this particular deer? Or is that end of it not particularly regulated?
No, that's mandatory. Anytime that you harvest a deer, it's mandatory that you register it. In years past, we used to have in-person registration stations. Now, through the Go Wild system and the game reg online, you can register your deer.
And so that's what that means. I mean, I heard you say that earlier, but I didn't catch what that meant. Okay.
Yep. So you register, so you you go online and you can figure out, you mention what you harvest, either a buck or an antlerless deer, and then providing additional information with that. That also gives you an avenue to do a CWD sample if you want. You can enter your information from that standpoint and then take your head to the location, drop it off. There's a form that we have at the stations, too, that they fill out, but all they have to do is fill out the minimal information. The rest of the data is already in the system. They can also do it by phone. And then there are some select locations where you can go in person and get some help with registering. But all that information is on the DNR website. We provide a lot of opportunity to figure out how to do things. We encourage people to take a look before they go out hunting to make sure that they have everything lined up.
Right. It sounds like your work, it has a lot to do with wildlife and not just deer, of course, but it sounds like your work has also a lot to do with actually interacting with hunters. And I should think that in and of itself is a really interesting part of the job.
It is. A lot of people think when they get into the wildlife program, I'm going to be out working with the critters all the time. It's a lot more people management and people interaction than you think. And it is rewarding talking to hunters, especially when I just talked to a gentleman about pheasant hunting out on Bong. And even though he wasn't happy about the kiosk situation, he said, you know, I really appreciate what you guys do out on the property for pheasant hunting. So we do get that compliment, and that is good. And we get to hear some interesting stories, too, at times from the hunters on their activities.
I'm sure you do. And you yourself are a hunter, right, from time to time?
I am. I started late. As I'd mentioned before, my immediate family is not big into hunting, but my predecessor, Tom Becker, helped me get into hunting, and now I turkey hunt, I do some waterfowl hunting, and I try also to do some deer hunting. So.
All right. So you understand what this is all about. But, of course, you, better than most, probably really understand the ultimate benefit of this. I mean, it is there is good that comes from this.
Correct. And good from the hunter standpoint, but also for the general public. As we mentioned before, our habitat work benefits both game and non-game species. Our properties are used a lot by bird watchers, nature photographers, things of that nature. So we're benefiting a wide spectrum of the public, not just our hunting. And our hunters are the ones that are helping to flip the bill to provide that opportunity for the public, too.
Very good. Marty Johnson is with the Wisconsin DNR, and he is also senior wildlife biologist at Richard Bong State Recreation Area out in Kansasville. And I assume Bong has a website where more information can be found?
Yep.
And, of course, Wisconsin DNR has its own website.
Correct.
As well. Very good. Marty Johnson, it's been great to meet you today. Thank you for making the trip and for sharing such interesting information with us today.
Glad to be here.
Kaylin Palomares, I think you have a couple of announcements before we finish out.
I do. Okay, so Marty actually informed me that Bong actually holds some awesome naturalist-led activities throughout the year. Hmm. And coming up are some owl prowls. Those are not on the schedule yet, but they are going to be coming up this winter.
Correct. It's a one night program where they talk about owls, and they have a falconer that brings in a bird, and then they go out looking for short-eared owls.
So definitely keep your eye on the website to look out for that. Also coming up is at Hawthorne Hollow. The Holiday Boutique is coming up, Holiday Boutique and Bakery. That is coming up on Saturday, December 7th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Santa will be there from 9 to noon with a kids' craft. I may or may not be there as well, so maybe I'll see you. The following Saturday on December 14th is the Wreath Making Workshop at Hawthorne Hollow. I will be leading that this year. They can't get rid of me. That's at 10 a.m. There will be a fee. It's not quite up on the website yet, but it should be soon, so keep your eye on that. And then finally, coming up on November 30th is a tree lighting ceremony at Petrifying Springs through Kenosha County Parks. At the Pets Beer Garden from 4:30 to 7 p.m., they will be having activities, a reindeer encounter. Santa will be there for free photos. And so that looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, too. So lots of stuff coming up.
Very good. And Santa gets around, doesn't he?
Yes,
great.
He does.
Kaylin Palomares, thank you so much for arranging this really interesting interview today. And we look forward to seeing you shortly with more interesting interviews.
Thanks, Greg.
Kaylin Palomares making her monthly visit to the morning show here on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, well-known sports writer John Feinstein talks about his latest book, The Ancient Eight, College Football's Ivy League and the game they play today. The morning show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. We remind you that the morning show can also be heard as a podcast. In fact, a different morning show 7 days a week. Be sure to look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg wherever you get your podcasts. Today is going to be mostly cloudy with intermittent rain possible through much of the day, a high of 53 degrees, overnight low of 43. We should see sunshine tomorrow with a high of 56 degrees. Sunshine expected on Saturday as well with a high of 57 degrees. Clouds return by Sunday, and there's a pretty darn good chance of rain the first several days of next week. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.